We are looking at another passage in the earlier preaching of Jeremiah this morning. In chapter 6, we have a well-known passage. If you'll turn there with me, we'll analyze what Jeremiah is trying to say. Thus says the Lord, stand by the roads and look, and ask for the ancient paths where the good way is, and walk in it, and find rest for your souls. Some years ago, this particular passage that we dealt with inspired one of our students to write a poem. And I'll read this poem as an introduction to the lecture. Ever since I was big enough to know anything about stuff, there have been those who love to say, we're at the crossroads today. Each and every generation, in avoiding degradation, sends a warning of decay, we're at the crossroads today. They shout it in convention hall. They discuss it again in circles small, and then to one another re-say, we are at the crossroads today. What? No progress have we made? That crossroads must have shade to induce a perpetual stay. We are at the crossroads today. Or are we doomed to be in a maze, confronted with crossroads all our days? Let me put it another way. We are at the crossroads of the crossroads today. This is the kind of passage that you have preached on yourself probably and heard many sermons on. But the problem is that that's exactly where we are. We are always being confronted by these crossroads. There are many roads that go in many directions, and you're having to decide which way you should go. And people are bewildered, not knowing which way to turn. Obviously, in this time of presidential election, people are bewildered. I dare say, in spite of the polls, results of the polls that we are getting, there are many people who do not really know which way they should go when it comes to their vote. Notice what he suggests you do when you come to a bewildering situation, trying to decide which way to go. He says, first of all, stand before the ways and look. Stand by the roads and look. In other words, you need to give it some thought. You don't need to, in a situation like this, to do anything just automatically. The average person has several different kinds of reactions to a situation like this. The average person doesn't spend much time though stopping to look. When you come to the crossroads, the average person gets his cue from somewhere else. Most people just see which way the crowd is going. And whichever road the crowd's taking, they got to go that way too. This is most amazing thing, you know, about traffic and interstates, you know, and expressways. Now you can understand, you know, why it is that a person who's from out of town and doesn't know your city, you can understand why he would end up on these expressways during a rush hour. Obviously. You don't get there more quickly that way, because you're going to get caught in bumper to bumper traffic. And most of these cities, they call these expressways during the rush hour the world's longest parking lot. That's where you sit, and you know you're going to sit there. Now, there are other ways getting through town at that time of day that would get you where you're going more quickly. But the average person is not going to do this. He's going to end up on that expressway where everybody else is, because that's where everybody is. A friend of ours went with us to Florida one or a couple of years ago. As we were driving back, we were discussing where we were going to stop and get lunch. So this friend said, well, look, there's a cafeteria. Why don't we stop and get lunch there at the intersection? We could see the sign. I said, well, it'll be a big crowd there. And we're going to lose a lot of time standing in line in that cafeteria. And she said, well, that's what she liked about it, standing in line with the crowd. Well, there are people, wherever they see the crowd, they're going to go, you know. And they don't ask any questions about where this road leads. Whatever everybody's doing, they'll do it too. Now, but Jeremiah says you're supposed to stop and do a little thinking and figure out what's the best way to go. Most people don't think. They just come to the intersection, see which way the crowd is going, and they head that way. Get right in the middle of it. Maybe the worst thing you can do, but everybody else is doing it, so why shouldn't you do it too? One of the worst traffic situations you have at rush hour is the one in Knoxville, Tennessee, at what they call a malfunction junction. Well, in malfunction junction, I got caught in that thing one time. The rest of the week when I was in this meeting in Knoxville, I spent all of my spare time driving around Knoxville trying to get around malfunction junction. And I found out it's very simple to do. It doesn't take you 15 minutes to get across that town in a direction if you stay off that expressway. But everybody in Knoxville is right in the middle of that thing every day, in spite of the fact that you can get around it. There are some cities you can't do it. You can do it in Louisville. You know your way around in Louisville. I'm not going to tell you because you get on that road and get in front of me and cause traffic to back up again. You can do it in Louisville. Nobody's found out how to do it in Washington, D.C. You can't make it in Washington. But people just automatically go with the crowd. Then there's the other. Some other people also make automatic decisions. And I have a tendency this way. I have to watch myself about it. Some people, when they see which way the crowd is going, automatically go the other way. You know, they say, well, look at that crowd on that expressway. We'll take this other way. And before long, you know, you end up in a worse situation than you had before because you're at a dead end with no place to go. I remember first time we went to Los Angeles. We got into one of those freeways, and we were up on about the sixth level of that thing. And we looked down below, and there was this mammoth traffic jam of traffic heading the other way, opposite direction from where we were going. We were rejoicing that we were so fortunate, you know, not to be caught in that. And we took several turns, you know, and first thing we knew, there we were at the tail end of that whole thing. If we'd known Los Angeles, we'd have gotten off one of those intersections before we went two or three turns like that. But you... some people automatically, when they see which way the crowd goes, that they do the opposite. When they discover that somebody thinks one way, then they think the other. When I found out that nobody around here was teaching the historical approach to the Bible, I started teaching it. And then when I found out that nobody was helping people with their preaching, I started helping them with their preaching. You discuss. You need, you know, some people just automatically look around and see where the opportunities are and the open roads, and they take it. But unless you think a long while about this, you are likely, before it's all over, to end up in the wrong place. Almost every place we go, because of its tendency in me, we end up going in the back door and losing time before it's over, but because we're on the wrong side of the thing, trying to avoid the crowds where everybody else is going. First time we went to Disney World, this woman volunteered to take us. She lived there at Orlando, and volunteered to take us over to Disney World. We took her invitation. But you know how it is sometimes with that kind of a deal. We ended up seeing all the things she liked to see and none of the things we wanted to see. So my wife and I decided we'd have to go back ourselves later on during the week and see what we wanted to see. So I made up my mind that I didn't want to get caught in that traffic jam again that we were caught in. And I looked at the map and tried to figure out some other way of getting in that place. And of course, if you know this, it'll save you a lot of time during the rush season, by the way. There, you know, those buses, they don't use the same entrance that average person uses to get in there. And those buses have a back road they travel from Orlando and miss all those mammoth traffic jams on those interstates and go in the back way. And I found out about it, and so I got lost several times, you know, back on those strange roads, but finally got in there to the gate, you know, where the buses go in, and they wouldn't let me in there. they only let buses go in that gate. So I had to go around and join that crowd anyway. You lose a lot of time sometimes with all that. Every once in a while, though, you may find your way. Every once in a while, it ends up a beautiful way in an open road, but it doesn't do to automatically decide that you're going to travel the novel way, because it may end up worse than being with a crowd. But some people just automatically, when they see people doing things, decide that they're going to do it differently. You don't want to automatically do anything when it comes to life. You have to stop and think and figure. Well, that's the third thing that people do. They, when they come to these crossroads, they just, you know, stop and ask directions, and go the way that people tell them to go. You know, you stop and you ask somebody what to do. Like he says, you stop and ask somebody, and whatever they tell you, you do. A woman called me not long ago and wondered what you're supposed to believe on a certain subject. Whatever I told her was what she was going to believe. Certain people you respect, or just some passerby, you know, you'll say, what about this road? Which one is the best one? What restaurant should you stop and eat at? We were up in the capital city of Maine, in Augusta, Maine, several years ago, first time we'd gone up there, and we tried to find a place to eat. And we couldn't find anything but what they call a Grease of Greeks place, you know. So right downtown, you know, the capital city. So finally we went by the service station to ask him where we could find a good place to eat, and he suggested this Grease of Greeks. I said, is that the best place you have in town? He said, well, I guess it is. I said, well, now, this is where the legislature meets, you know. Well, where do the people eat who come to the legislature? He said, also they eat over at the hot dog stand right beside the Capitol building. Well, you don't get much counsel. I found out later on it was a very nice restaurant right in the edge of town, but this man didn't know anything about it. Just taking advice from people, you know, often people say, well, the thing to do is to find out where it is that all the truckers eat, you know, when you want to eat in a good place. Well, if you like the kind of food the truckers like, then that's the place to stop, but you may like something else. The different tastes that people have will keep you from necessarily wanting to go the way that some other people go. You need to ask a few more questions before you start taking advice about which way to go. Yesterday afternoon, I was supposed to meet the pastor and some people at a restaurant. And he told me where the restaurant was. I wouldn't have any trouble at all, you know, finding it, you know. He said, you saw it when you came in today. I didn't see it when I came in today. He said, no problem at all. He gave me some in the case. He said, main thing was it was across from a, he said, it's across from a, the lumber store. Well, I went breezing into town. I thought it ought to be on the edge of town since it was a lumber place and a restaurant. And I didn't see a sign to be the one. And all of a sudden, I saw a building. It looked like they might sell lumber. And I decided I better turn in this road and found this restaurant about a quarter of a mile off the road that I was supposed to be able to see. And the signs for the lumber company, the signs for the lumber company and for the restaurant had been blown down in the recent storm. And nobody in town even noticed the signs were gone. Now, they knew where the restaurant was, and they just went over there. You just can't always take counsel from people about what you do when you start asking for directions. So he suggests then that when you come to this, Jeremiah suggests when you come to these crossroads, that yes, you're going to ask somebody, but you better ask somebody who knows. When I just, I lose complete confidence in anybody who gives me directions, and then as soon as he finishes giving directions, he will say, you can't miss it. Now, I take that as a challenge. The reason why he says you can't miss it, and he just doesn't realize the infinite number of possibilities for missing it. And so if he starts talking to you about, now, you know, you might make a mistake here, and you better be sure to do this, and then, you know, he realizes the kind of human being you are. So you need to ask somebody that knows, and somebody who knows how to tell you what to do. There's several things you can refer to when you want to know what road to take. The first thing is a road map. Now, I prefer a road map. I was driving to the Southern Baptist Convention one year with a colleague of mine. I was driving, and he was reading the road map. And we got lost hopelessly. And in disgust, I said to him, he was, you know, had a doctor's degree. I said to him, don't you know how to read a road map? And he confessed that he didn't know how to read one. And I said, well, what do you do then when you're in strange country? He said, I just stop at the nearest service station and ask directions. Well, if you know how to read a road map, it's a pretty good thing to help you. And the Bible, you know, is a sort of road map, but you have to know how to read it. You have to know what its figures are and symbols. To figure out how to read it, the Bible helps you tremendously, you know, in seeing what direction to go. A good way, well, the best way, though, is to have been on the road before. And somebody who's been on it and knows the road and can tell you something about where it goes and where it ends up, the kind of road it is. Somebody who's had the experience. But the best thing to have, and this is what you really love somebody for this, you know, he'll say, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going that way myself, and you just get behind me and follow me. And that's the wonderful thing about Jesus Christ. He's already traveled that road, and he goes in front of us. He leads us. We just follow him. The Holy Spirit comes to work with us to take us along the route that has been traveled before. So you stop, though, and you ask. And he even tells you the questions to ask. You know, if you don't ask the right questions, you won't get the right answers. And there are plenty of people, you know, just waiting, you know, to misguide you just because of the fact that you are a stupid tourist, and they'll just answer the questions that you ask, and they won't ask any more. So what we would do if we came to a situation like this in a strange town, strange part of the world, the first question we would ask would be, where is that expressway? Where is that new road? Jeremiah says the question to ask is, where are the old roads? Now, of course, this is because they had a different situation when it came to roads in ancient times from the one we have. And whenever you're talking about a biblical passage, you're not going to be able to interpret it properly unless you understand the historical situation. Nobody but a fool would want to travel over a new road in ancient times. Nothing but dust and rocks if it were dry season, and nothing but mud if it were wet season. You just didn't travel new roads, so there were no conditions for anybody to travel. But what you wanted to do was to travel an old road. Well, now, although the highway situation is different today, life is not different. And if you want to be sure you get to your destination in life, you'd better not try one of these new roads, because they may get you there, and they may not. You may be headed for heaven and end up in hell on these new roads. You don't know quite where their condition or where they might lead. And so the question is, where? Stand by the roads and look and ask for the ancient paths. The Hebrew here is, ask for the rutted paths of yore. The rutted paths. It's a Hebrew word for a road that's been traveled so much that ruts are there. And once you get in that rut, you stay in it. There's no way you can get lost, because it's been worn so that when once you get in there, you'll go toward your destination, and it's been there a long time. The worn paths of yore, Y-O-R-E, someone has translated, the rutted paths of ancient times. You want to know where these old roads are. Some people, that's all they do. They just ask it that way. They want to know where the old roads are. And they think just because it's an old road, it's a good one. But no, you better qualify that. You want to know where the old paths are, but you want to know out of the old paths, which one is the good one. Just because something is old, it doesn't necessarily make it good. We have a tendency today, because of the difficulties of the present and the apparent hopelessness of the future, we have a tendency today to honor something, you know, just because it's old. When I was growing up, you know, all young couples dreamed of owning a new house. Now, most of the young couples I know prefer an old house. That shows sometimes it's reality. They don't build them like they used to. But some of these old houses, they have a population there already of termites and everything else. Just because it's an old house, it may be a good sound house. It may not be. Just because it's old doesn't necessarily make it good. We speak of the old-time religion as if it's necessarily good. And there may be some things wrong about that, as well as some things that are right. The newer kind of expression of the Christian faith may be better than what the old one was. People think just because it's old, though, it's the way our forefathers did, the way I did when I was growing up, this is what makes it good. You want to know where that old road is. What's the road that people have been traveling all these centuries? Where are the old roads? Well, there's one. People have been traveling that since creation. It's the one Adam and Eve traveled. It's an old road of disobedience of God and desire to do it yourself and to make your own decisions, independent of deity. It's an old road. People have been traveling ever since the creation of man. But do you want to travel that road? There's another old road. People have been traveling that a long while. It's the one that Saul traveled in the Old Testament, following his own personal ambition, completely confused because he was torn between what people expected of him and what God expected of him. You want to travel that road? It's an old road. It's pretty well worn. You get your wagon in that one. You'll stay in that rut. Is that the one you want to travel? Well, no, that's not exactly the one. I want to know, where is this, the literal language here, where is this the way of the good? Where is this the way of the good? Out of all of these roads that people have traveled throughout the history of mankind, where is the one that is the good one? Well, this is not too rutted. It's not too many people have traveled. The crowd certainly don't go this way. But you can make out the path. It's the one that Abraham traveled, Moses, Elijah. It's a way of faith. It's a way of faith. The old road, the way of faith, traveled by men of faith. You know, we hear about Jesus talks about the narrow gate and the straight way. And it's a difficult way. You have to toil as you make your way up it. But I like the way one of the Proverbs puts it. This is the way I translate it. The proverb goes, the way of the wicked is hedged about. The way of the wicked is hedged about with thorns, but the way of the righteous is an open road. In many ways, a life of integrity and righteousness is much easier to live than a way of wickedness, because the wicked is always getting tangled up in the briar patch. And once you decide that you're going to travel the road of faith, the decisions of your life are much more simple than the decisions of people who have decided they're going to travel some of the other old roads, which amount to rebellion against God and the very purposes which you were created. So you want to know out of the old ways, which is the good one? So there you are, you're at the crossroads, and you're asking somebody, and you figure this fellow seems to have been around, he knows what he's doing, he seems to know by the way he talks that he's acquainted with these roads, and you want to know which is the old one, and where are the old ones, which is the good one? So you say, thank you very much. And so you sit there until somebody else comes by, and you ask him which way you should go. And he may tell you the same way, or may tell you some other one. You say, thank you very much. And so you spend the rest of your life sitting there at the crossroads asking advice. So it won't do just to sit there and ask which way to go. Sooner or later, what will you have to do? You'll have to travel it. You'll have to walk it. I know so many people that just won't do this. Our churches are full of them. They come every Sunday morning asking you advice about which way to go. And you hand out your advice every Sunday. And they say, that's a good sermon, preacher. And the next Sunday, they're right there at the same crossroads, want to know what to do. They're not about to walk that road. But they love to get counsel about it. This lady who ran this church where I pastored as a student in college, she's the only one having the money. And so she completely controlled the life of the church. No sooner was I there as pastor than she began to ask my counsel about what to do with her money. She had inherited all this money from her father, and she was aware of the fact that her father had made this money in questionable ways, and that was bothering her conscience how the money had been made. And she wanted to know what she should do with it. And I made all these different suggestions, you know, about giving it to missions and helping the cause of the poor. And she would think of some reason why this wouldn't work and why that wouldn't work. No matter what I brought up, you know, somehow she had an argument against it. Finally, I said, well, the best thing I think you could do with your money is to buy me an automobile. I need a car. So she took that advice, and I got my first car that way. But I saw pretty quickly that she was not going to walk that road. She just enjoyed discussing, you know, what you should do. Just like, young people, when you're having a seminar with them, always want to talk about dating, you know, and marriage and sex. And so now whenever I have a seminar like this with young people, I eliminate those subjects completely from our discussions because I know they don't intend to listen to anything I have to say about it. They just enjoy talking about sex and dating. And they're not seeking any kind of counsel from me. And you find that out sooner or later. People just enjoy asking for advice. But they don't intend to do any walking. They said, we were not walking it. No, this is the way they, it's interesting, you know, how the RSV moves from the King James. And it's more dependent upon the King James than you might think. And so many of its translations. You know, in the King James Version, well, whenever the translators insert words of their own, they'll put them in italics. But when you come to the RSV, they will take those italicized words of the King James and just print them, you know, as if that's what the Hebrew says. At least the King James lets you know what they're doing, that they're supplying words. The Hebrews simply says, but they said, we will not walk, period. Not we will not walk in it. We will not walk. We will stay here at the crossroads asking counsel. We're not going to walk at all. We're going to sit here in the shade of a tree and watch the people go by and ask people counsel and spend the rest of our life just taking it easy, asking for advice. You let everybody else go on to that instruction, but we're just going to sit here asking counsel about what to do. So you've got to walk in it. You've got to do something about this counsel. You've got to give it a try. One of the early speakers here, when I was a student, made a statement that stuck in my mind. He said, you can't steer a ship that's sitting still. Now, you just try when a ship is sitting at the wharf to get that ship to move, to go in any direction when it's not moving. It's got to get to moving before you can steer it. And the same thing is true about life. You've got to be willing to fail. You've got to be willing to make mistakes in order to get going. You can't steer a ship that's sitting still, and you can't accomplish any real purpose in life if you aren't moving. You've got to make a try. People afraid of failure are the ones who are most likely to end up failing. You've got to make a try at it. You've got to walk in it. But they're not going to walk at all. They're just going to stand there or sit there in the shade and ask for counsel and watch everybody else go on. Well, suppose you do walk in this old road, though, this road of faith that's been traveled by men of faith throughout the centuries. Suppose you decide that you're going to walk in this good road, what is the result of it? You will find rest for your soul. The noun here, rest, better translation of it would be quiet. You will find quiet for your soul. The root meaning of that word carries the idea of fright. It describes a bird once frightened by a snake, in which the bird is just frozen. And it describes a soul in which there is not even a quiver of anxiety. You will find quiet for your soul. Not so much rest, you know, sitting down and taking a nap kind of business. But the sort of quiet that comes to your soul because you know you are safe, you know you're on the right road, you know you found yourself, you'll find quiet for your soul. Now, Jeremiah is probably influenced by passages in Isaiah here. Turn to Isaiah chapter 26. the same, not the same word, but it's the same concept. Isaiah 26:3. Let us keep him in perfect peace. Isaiah says perfect peace. Jeremiah says quiet. Let us keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee because he trusts in thee. That verse used to bother me. I've seen it hanging on walls and homes and pastor studies. Let's keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee. It looks like from that verse, the only chance you have of finding peace is being able to fix your mind on God all the time. And therefore, for a person who is involved in life and its problems, in the middle of the maelstrom of life struggles, that you don't have a chance at peace. The only person who has a chance at peace is a person who can keep his mind fixed on God all the time. Well, you can even drive on an expressway. You get yourself killed because you have to concentrate on God all the time. So the only way to find peace then would be to become a monk so you can fix your mind on God. But I talked to a few monks and found out they have a problem too, keeping their minds fixed on God. Even though you're there all quiet by yourself, you still got a problem. So really, you know that can't be what it means. Can I possibly mean that peace is in proportion to how you keep your mind fixed on God? Because that means that the person involved in life doesn't have a chance at it. Jeremiah says, if you'll walk that old road, you'll find it. What does Isaiah mean here then? Well, of course, again, the same problem we have in the Jeremiah text. The RSV has obscured the fact that they're supplying words that are not in the text. The Hebrew simply says, let us keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed, not on thee. Let us keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed, his mind is fixed, because he trusts in thee. Oh, you trust in God, but your mind is fixed. You have decided, because of your relationship to God and your faith, the course that you should travel in your life, that you will travel the road of faith. And so you travel that road. You ask which way to go, and you're told the way, and you travel that way. Then you're the one who will have perfect peace. The perfect peace comes to the person whose mind is fixed. First of all, you decide what it is that God wants you to do and the road that he wants you to travel. And you travel that road and you don't let anything keep you from it. Nothing will turn you aside. You keep plowing ahead in the direction and on the road that God has given to you. That's the person when he comes to the end of his life who has peace, that you know you have traveled the road of your responsibility. As someone else has said, the average person makes his contribution to life by doing what he has to do. You have a road to travel that's your responsibility, and so you travel it. God gives you his instructions. You know which way to go, and you put your feet on that road, and you stay on it. So this is the person who finds peace. Well, now, suppose then, let's turn this thing around and come at it from the other side. Suppose you don't have quiet in your soul. Suppose you are anxious and tense and afraid and disturbed. What's the reason for it? Well, it could be that you're sick. You have to allow for that possibility. My daughter and son-in-law work with schizophrenics, and they're having a new experimental work here in Louisville, in which they're putting these people on dialysis machines like you do kidney patients and change their blood, and for 2 weeks they're perfectly normal. And then they have to go back to the machine. For 2 weeks, though, they behave just like normal people. You could be, you have an imbalance of chemicals in your system. And that's why you're upset and disturbed and divided. It could be a physical matter. Nobody knows. They don't know yet, you know, what those chemicals really are and what causes them and why they're in your system. It's quite possible that something in your mind has created that imbalance. Nobody knows yet just what causes it. They know that people can behave like normal people if they put them on those machines. It could be that it's something physical, but the chances are that it's something else. Chances are that if you don't have quiet in your soul, the chances are if you're all disturbed and divided and upset, that you've gotten off the old road, that you're not traveling the road of faith. The Bible assures us, and I'm sure it knows what it's talking about, if you travel that road, you'll find quiet for your soul. This is not the quiet that you have when everything is still around you. You know the old story, don't you, about the contest they had among some artists, and they were all supposed to paint their understanding of peace. And one artist painted this beautiful picture, you know, of a lake and a beautiful sunshiny day in the spring, and not a ripple on the lake and not a leaf was stirring on the trees. Another artist, though, he had quite a different idea. He painted a picture of a sea and a storm, and the waves were dashing against the shore, and the lightning was flashing, and the wind was blowing, and trees were bending under the force of the wind. Upon the uppermost bough of one of those swaying trees, a little bird was perched, who was singing for all he was worth at the thrill of a storm. And the artist called it peace. Of course, that was peace. Now, that's not peace, you know, which makes your soul still when everything is going your way and everything is quiet around you. You found real peace and quiet when there's quiet in your soul and the storms are raging about you. So if you haven't found this quiet, the reason is you're not walking the old road. If you walk this old road, you can find that. That's the kind of Jesus said, "My peace I give you." Not the kind of peace that the world gives. The world gives you peace that makes you happy when everything goes your way. But the wonderful thing about the peace of God is that it's there regardless of what's happening to you, that nothing that happens to you from outside can affect it. You will find quiet for your soul. Well, that's what happens if you'll walk that old road. Well, what will happen if you don't walk it? Well, you're just going to stand there. You know, you're going to stand there deciding you're not going to walk at all until the enemy starts coming. The enemy rolls up, you know, with his army. And you realize that you better get out of that place. And so you head out as fast as you can go. But the only problem is that God has been doing something here. Verse 21, "Therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will lay before this people stumbling blocks against which they shall stumble." So you decide you're going to take off. Now the danger is here, and you're going to head off as quick as you can, but God is putting a stumbling block in front of you, and you fall over on your face when you start running this time. It's too late. Too many things have gotten in the way to keep you from traveling that road. Some of you have been going through this trying to get to the seminary, you know. You should have come long ago, and every time you tried to come, some stumbling block is in the way. If you had come earlier, they never would have been there. We delay, we fool around. When we could have taken that road, we could have traveled it, and we delay until the stumbling blocks are there, and every time we try to get going, we are running into these things again. It's just too late. So the thing to do is to take Jeremiah's advice. When you come to the crossroads, you stand and look and decide you'd better ask the right people the right questions, and you want to know where the old roads are, which is a good one. Then if you'll walk in it, you indeed will find quiet for your soul. Let's take our break now.